famed author Clive Cussler.
The hero, Dirk Pitt.
Her skin was the color of cocoa, and her conical breasts with their dark, full nipples. 32 years old and still damned provocative, her nostrils detected his strong male scent.
Vixen 03, Episode 3, Girls Gone Wild Rose.
And I don't care who you, nobody has it in the budget for Bentleys doing terrorism. That's a Honda or a Toyota. You don't put Bentleys in the terrorism.
Up here, most of the focus was on the fact that one border guard got injured. But it seems like, I think the news up here is saying that he had a heart attack and just didn't slow down.
Oh.
Like he was having some kind of medical emergency and just drove full speed into a pylon.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense than the stuck accelerator that I heard this morning. Because I've had a car, my Chevy Celebrity, stuck on with no brakes. And I've had to, like a function, I was 17 or 18. And I was going downhill and nothing was stopping it. So like I turned the car off. I threw it into park, turned the car off, and I tried to hit a tree instead of like oncoming traffic. And I just spun around, nothing happened, and my car was good for another day.
You pulled a Vixen 03 and tried to ditch safely where it wouldn't injure the pups.
My car was such a piece of shit, I was willing to let the transmission fall out en route. Like, I knew if I did this, my engine or transmission might just fall out. Boys! Boys, keep it down, okay?
I can't hear them.
Okay, good. There's play dates. There's activities.
Ah.
My daughter wanted to go. She's like, I've never been to Black Friday. She had this fear of missing out for Black Friday. So it was like 3 o'clock. I took her to the mall. It was empty. Nobody was there. She was like, well, isn't there supposed to be a thing happening? Like, what kind of thing? Like a parade? No, it's just in the 90s and early aughts, people stabbed each other for the chance at a 50 buck TV. They don't do that anymore. Life is better. But oh, this was great. My in-laws hosted Thanksgiving. And do you know who Elizabeth Warren is? Or just think of like a woman that's put together, educated, and patrician. And classy, like the queen.
Yes.
Or Doris Day. But she's an imp. She's a chaos monster, my mother-in-law. I love her. Whatever traditional, like, stereotypical roles mother-in-laws have, that's not what she is. She is whip smart. She's a master of Russian literature. And
neat.
You know, she's just a fine lady. Oh, now my husband's here. Hi.
Hello.
Go.
I'm buying you a taser.
Thank you. I'd like one with maybe some throat arts. They will all ignore me. Until I say I'm on the phone or busy or something, and then all the little things trying. But this is a proper woman. But like I said, chaos monster underneath, low key. She'll throw a grenade at a beehive just to see what happens. She was studying, like an anthropologist, she studied all the children's slang or like the current slang.
Nice.
To mess with the kids.
I love her already.
So she was telling Katie about an altercation she had. She was like, I was arguing with someone over, you know, the price of lamb chops or whatever. And she was like, it was an argument. It wasn't a fight. I didn't throw hands, Katie. And then she would like try and work that in. And then she was like, why would we ever think you would throw hands, Grandma? She was just, it was the most absurd out there thing. It was like the queen saying, oh, I didn't punch him in the face. Like, no, nobody thought that. Nobody thought that. And then she peppered in other like getting jiggy with it or.
That one's a little old.
Other things. Like it was a sociological study. She was like, what will they react to? It was great.
One of my wife's hobbies is she knows all the modern slang thanks to our kids, but she enjoys using it wrong around them just to piss them off.
I use it wrong constantly. I put the's in front of things like the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Snapchats. Yeah. They hate that.
I use it right. And then like my daughter, who is the most sarcastic child ever, will just look at me and go, very good, Dad. And then just go back to her phone. Like the most condescending possible way of telling me that I've used a slang correctly.
You changed her diapers. She's condescending. How does that feel?
When she's a little older, I'm going to start pushing back on this. But
oh, the grace and the restraint of parenthood.
Also, the other thing I wanted to ask you, how did your viewing of Raise the Titanic go?
Oh, it went wonderful. My husband got really sick and fell asleep.
Yeah, that movie has that effect on people.
Deliberately evil. I haven't slipped the news yet. It's coming. And every week since we started the Titanic book, the Titanic will come down a dark alley and get me no matter what, every week since. Like some bit of trivia or some monstrosity of capitalist knowledge will drop, like, oh, the movie made this much money, or this memorabilia sold for this much. It just trickles through constantly. Once you see it, how could a ship that sank so long ago still be in the news all the time?
It's just one of those things that became a piece of
culture now.
Yeah, it's like a meme all unto itself. You say Titanic, everybody knows everything associated with the Titanic. They know about the movie. They know about the sinking. They know about James Cameron. They know about that sub that imploded. Like, you say Titanic.
Yeah, you know that there was famous people on board. They might not know the names, but they knew that there were rich and famous people on board.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the things that will be erased. Like Houdini. Kids that are 5 years old know Houdini. Magician.
Yeah.
What stays and what...
That's also shorthand.
Yeah. What stays and what sticks is amazing.
I love that all they know about him is he's a magician and he got out of chains underwater. And I've learned so much more about him from various podcasts, like The Dollop. He would go town to town and he would personally go to every psychic and every seance and every spiritualist and just debunk them in real time and piss them off until the cops are called and then leave. And just go to the next one. Like, that's what he did for fun.
Yeah, and he was friends with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, but Conan Doyle dug too hard into the woo and seances and stuff, and he couldn't handle being debunked, so the friendship flew out the window.
Yeah, on stage, he was the world's best magician, and the rest of the time, he's just shouting, magic isn't real, you're all idiots. I love him.
Yeah, that is great. Also, I can't send my daughter to magic camp again. She won't go. But if you want to send your daughter to magic camp, I can make that happen. Let's get a magician somewhere. We need more magicians.
I don't think she'd be into that. A few years ago, man, that could have completely derailed her life.
You could really throw a monkey wrench into it. So you want to be a doctor or an accountant? Here, magician.
You're a wizard, Poppy.
This book is wild. I know we're dancing around.
I think you've said that on every episode. Those four exact words. I need to like go back and make a counter of every time you say, this book is wild.
Man. No, it's my verbal tick. No, don't point it out.
Boy, howdy, do I know our verbal ticks inside and out now. Man.
What chapter did we leave off at?
We ended at the end of 16.
Okay.
Because it was about to shift sideways into Hiram, Lusana, and the AAR stuff. So I figured we could do all that at once. And I've read up to the end of chapter 24, because 25, they're back in Washington. So possibly we can get through 17 to 24 and finish out this South African section of the book before we get back to, hopefully, Dirk Pitt will come back to this Dirk Pitt novel.
Come back to Dirk Pitt. I just wanted to share one more bit of joy that I found. And our listeners might want to take this with them during the stressful holiday time. I don't speak Italian at all. I know some words here or there. We all do. We live on planet Earth. But to just feel like your day is going better, like just to listen to the Costa Concordia captain being berated by the Coast Guard when he abandoned his ship. It'll bring you life every time. That's the captain who is like, wasn't even wet. He left 20 minutes after the start of like the ship being like stranded in the Mediterranean as it started to list. And he's like out of there. And the Coast Guard is like, the law might not come for you, but I will, motherfucker. Get back on the goddamn boat.
Oh, hell yeah.
Look at the exact translation, because what I have in my head is its own story, and I don't want to disrupt that, but you get the gist of it. You get the, my fucking God, you goddamn asshole, get back on that boat. It is just great.
I'll insert some sound bites into the episode.
I didn't need to give you work.
Oh, no, it's not work.
It's your own listeners. You do it yourself.
I said a few sound bites because that will, you know, lure them to go and track down more, maybe.
It was just, it's so gratifying. I don't know why, but it was wonderful. Okay, now.
Anyways.
It's time for Cussler Hustlers, people, listeners. Hello, welcome to Cussler Hustlers, where we talk about Clive Cussler books. This is chapter 17 of Vixen 03. I am Nancy, and that is your host over there, Topper.
Hello.
Topper impersonated an arrow. He said, ooh.
I said hello.
Oh, okay. I thought you said ooh.
Ooh.
Doesn't matter. You're the owl that killed that lady that was pushed down the stairs. Everyone knows what I'm talking about.
No?
It's a staircase. The staircase murders. Oh, you're a man. It's a true crime thing. You haven't
this
heard
of rings
it. Sorry.
A bell like this. This absolutely rings a bell, but I cannot remember what the hell it was.
This guy offed his wife in Germany, marries a new wife, They live in the U.S. She falls down the stairs. She's found at the foot of the stairs, and there's owl feathers in her hair.
I do remember this. Man, that is a weird reference.
Hey,
I mean, I make nonstop weird references. It's just usually I'm on the same page as you. This was like, I remember hearing that and going, really, dude? And then just moving on with my life.
Every woman I know talks about that. Like, you know how they say currently men are obsessed with Rome, ancient Rome? They think about it once a day.
Yeah.
Every woman I know thinks about that murder like once a week. They're like, oh, he did it. He totally did it.
And now they're worried anytime they hear an owl, it's their turn.
Yes. If my husband hoots or if any man hoots, we're all on the lookout. Heads on a swivel. But I guess you haven't been if you're a part owl. Well,
as a Canadian, I'm part moose, not owl.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was...
Speciesist?
It was insensitive of me. Boy, howdy, does this book get uncomfortable?
A little bit, yes. Much like last week, this week I spent a lot of time thinking, how can I talk about this book and not get canceled?
Yes. Let me take the wheel here. We left...
I'll chime in where I can.
Oh, he left Fox, the Scottish man who moved with his family to South Africa, to Farmstead. His family's been killed, and now he's a man without a family. He's got nothing left to lose. He's wound up.
You're a loose cannon, meow, meow, fuzzy face.
Then we cut to Lucina and his girlfriend, Felicia Collins, in bed. They hear something's up, and Hiram Lucena takes off her covers and gazes upon his naked girlfriend with admiration, and then ends the scene. So just throws a naked girl in there, just fun. We get like 2 seconds with her, and then we're out of there.
2 seconds, but in the audiobook, that's like four paragraphs of describing every part of her in that way that these books do, where it's going body part by body part. And it's not her stuff, it's the stuff. And that's still awkward to me.
You know, I don't even clock that, the stuff, not her stuff. That's so disturbing. That is so extra disturbing.
Also, I'm pretty sure since she's... actually African-American. Hiram is also African-American. I'm not saying that because they're black people in Africa. I'm saying they are specifically Americans who are in Africa and have been co-in charge of the AAR.
Yes, nationalities and are key. They're,
yeah.
They can't be ignored in this.
She has been described using ebony and mahogany and coffee and cocoa. And it's all of those memes about, like, you know, how racialized people would describe white people in stories. This is where that comes from. Every dark wood, every dark food, I'm pretty sure there's got to be like some dark animals that they'll be compared to. It's every... Ugh.
Yes. There's a lot of comparisons here where he is trying to not be... He's trying to be progressive, clearly. But it's coming through the lens of...
I do think he's trying.
And it's just like, it's an effort. You could tell this was Sisyphean for him to try and be cool here.
And there's all this lurid text for Felicia, and Hiram is basically described as a small man, medium-boned, light-skinned, but with the confidence of a boxer. So this is like this small, intense dude.
Yes, and I love boxing, so I got the reference, and lightweight boxing is the best. They move the fastest. They're great.
Oh, hell yeah.
They make a point to say he's the lightest-skinned of all the men he's commanding. They're all darker than him. Why? It's just a line there. He's lighter than the men he's commanding, just so you know. Then drops out.
I think they're highlighting the fact that he is an outsider because he was like an American. He's been involved with drugs and crime, and now he's somehow like involved with the African Army of Revolution. So it's to further cement the fact that he's an outsider who's taken control of this thing that's not his.
Okay.
If that's what he's going for, I like it and I think it worked.
Yeah, it feels like we're making an excuse there, but...
I'm guessing...
Anyway, Lusada is the guerrilla leader, but he's at a really, it's not fly by night. He is an institution at this point. He's got a headquarters, he's got an establishment, he's got infrastructure, and he's alerted that one of his men needs to report to him and only him. So he gets out of bed reluctantly, leaves his gorgeous girlfriend Felicia Collins behind, and encounters the Chinese doctor that's treating Samala, who was previously gravely injured and crawled back to camp to get medical attention. And he's almost dying. And Lusana says to the doctor, can you pep him up a bit? I mean, he's going to die anyway. And doctor's like, yeah, sure, I guess not. Guess no reason not to. It's inevitable, right? And that doctor takes off after that.
Yep, damn communist.
Guess not all doctors swear an oath, but some of us swear an oath to a paycheck, so that's fine.
Hello, I like money.
Lusana tells Lusana, it doesn't help that the names rhyme. I'm sorry. This is a lot. Dying. He tells Lusana everything he saw. He's like, why didn't you trust me? You sent these other guys to do the same job. So Lusana gets the lowdown on everything that was witnessed at the farm.
Yes. He tells everything. He passes out. And by noon, he was dead.
Yes. That last shot of adrenaline to get him vocal was it. And I think there was a episode of 24 in the later seasons that they did the same thing to a president. Oh. So the trope lives on. We have to get the secrets. Give him the shot. It'll kill him. No. Maybe it's season 4. It was the later 24s. Nobody saw those. I think it was me and one other guy, maybe the star of the show. Nobody else knows what's kept in those seasons.
I watched the first season of that, and then nothing since. That was around the time I stopped watching TV almost entirely.
Oh, okay. Early aughts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had TV. You know, we lived in a whole series of apartments. That was when streaming started to be a thing. But that was also when we had, as the Simpsons joke goes,
oh, I have 3 kids and no money. Why can't I have no kids and 3 money?
We had 3 kids and no money. So we didn't have cable. We didn't have anything. We had VCR and we bought movies at garage sales.
Well, also, if you had 3 kids, you're not getting TV time anyway. It's going to be whatever.
Oh, exactly.
Whatever they want. Oh, I saw your dad at the mall. His wife was fumbling with like her phone. She was yelling at somebody on the phone, some family, something was going on. I'm an outside observer. I've just noticed this in passing. And she says, just put Miss Rachel on your phone. And he goes, who's Miss Rachel? And I was like, that's a bad dad.
My kids are very big right now, so I have no idea who Miss Rachel is.
You would have known if your kid was under 3. It would have been like Elvis.
Paw Patrol? Blippi?
Yes. Blippi. Oh, my God. Anyway, back to apartheid.
Yes.
It's a winding road. It is. Life is full of details, and there's stray ones, and boy, we'll think of every one we can to
avoid talking about this.
Filter this episode through.
Chapter 18 is a lot like chapter 16. It's mostly a flashback of Fox retiring from the Royal Navy and gathering up his family and moving to South Africa, and how his kids went from being pale and sickly to being tan and robust, and how much they loved Africa. Just missing his family.
Yes, and you get a sense from this that he's taking some blame. Like, if it wasn't for him, his family wouldn't have moved.
It is.
A little bit of that, and montage scene. Very 80s montage. You could see this. If you closed your eyes, you could see him remembering his kids. The film, like the slideshow passing by of his life. You can envision it. It would make a great montage. Beautiful family, and then beautiful family slaughtered. And now he is a man with nothing to lose, and revenge is on his mind. He only dreams of Lusana and revenge.
Yep.
This is the worst name for a villain ever.
Hiram Lusana?
Lusana? Doesn't roll off my tongue easy.
There was one line I wanted to run past you, just get your opinion on it. And that's in the middle of Fox having his big breakdown. When a woman loses a man, she picks herself up and keeps going. When a man loses a woman, he loses half of himself. That does sound like the hyper-romanticized, like, written by a man about a man, about how, like, he lost his true love and he can't go on living.
Yes.
Whereas women are, oh, fucking Jimmy.
Where women just, well, there is sort of an expectation that men, that husbands die before wives.
Yeah.
So that is kind of ingrained in the social structure. But it's not like you walk it off. Like, oh, you were married for 75 years? Rub some dirt in it and move along.
Yeah, I was wondering if, since this was written in 1978, like, and he was in his 40s by then, so he was raised in the 40s and 50s, if he was just really used to men go off to war and die, and their wives and family are just like, oh, well, gotta keep going. Like, so that would be something that he's seen a lot more than...
Yeah, that would be something he was raised with. The men go away, especially, you know, the men go to war, they go away. And also if he was raised in what Reddit would call a culture of weaponized incompetence, where women's work is women's work, and you don't do that, what would a man... You'd have to get remarried right away. You'll starve.
Yeah.
Big caveman can't feed himself.
Need woman, do laundry. Matt Walsh.
Dishes, it's no question. I'm not sure in our entire marriage if I've ever done a full load of laundry.
Yes. His wife appliance was just buried. Have a heart.
Anyway, back to Lusana.
If we go to chapter 19, Lusana has a conference room and a conference table. Both of these things are pointed out in the first sentence. Though, normally, it goes without saying, if there's a conference room, there's a conference table. Clive pointed this out. I love him for it. Nothing goes without saying, Clive.
Yeah, and we meet a lot of new people, and I didn't think any of them would come back, but I'm pretty sure all of them have come back in the following chapters.
All of them came back in these two paragraphs. Like, everybody. This is a reunion.
Yeah.
Trying to find who killed the Fox family, because it doesn't make any sense. And one of his guys is like, well, maybe the South African government did it to make us look bad. And they were like, no, wait, maybe? Yeah. So this is like the first inklings that this might be a false flag operation or a setup, a frame job, because it looks like the AR killed the Fox family when clearly that was not the case, as we know from Somala. And Lusana wants to determine who it is. And they have a spy somewhere in the apartheid government under the codename Emma.
Yes.
And this just throws Lusana into a tizzy. A spy with a woman's name? Forget the intelligence the spy has. It's a man going by a woman's name? Stop the presses. He must be a transvestite.
Wacky.
Not the thing to zone in on.
No, like, there was a whole bunch of things dropped in this chapter that he could have focused on. Well, maybe he focused on it and then moved on, because they're pointing out what group could possibly afford to outfit a raid like this that had top-of-the-line weaponry. How come they weren't tracked down? Because 10 minutes after the raid, dogs and helicopters were on the scene, and they still had time to pick up all their bodies and all the bullet casings.
It was 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Most of us can't get out of the house in 10 minutes with hours of warning. You have to return a library book at 3 o'clock. Some of us, it might take us till 3:05 to get out of the house. These people were on top of their plans. They picked up after themselves. Very, very professional and very well-funded. Or else they would have been caught, is their determination.
Yes.
When they do a raid, they need at least an hour to get everybody out clean. They sit 10 minutes seems like a suicide mission. They would definitely get caught in 10 minutes, and they are befuddled by this detail.
Shockingly efficient. But they do realize that only one group could possibly benefit from this, and it's the South African whites, which I'm spelling with extra H's every time it's brought up like that.
Can you do that?
Whites.
It's, I wasn't doubting your ability. I was doubting.
I'll spell however I want to spell.
Okay, fine. Oh, do you remember Tom Hanks? You know who he is? Tom Hanks, the actor?
Yeah, of course.
He's big. His son, Chad?
Oh, God, Chad Hanks. I'm definitely dropping some sound bites of him.
Big up. Big up the whole island, massive. It's your boy Chetana coming straight from that Golden Globes, you know what I'm saying?
I heard about this from audio information podcasts and such, where he had like a tattoo, but it was in a racist font. And everybody's like, what's a racist font? I was like, a font is a font. It can't be racist. And then I looked at it and I was like, oh my, that is a racist font. Didn't think there was one of those. That's just the overall vibe of Clive Cussler here is it racist? And when you go back and you imbibe those stories or works of art or media, it does place it. It's why we're reading these books now. It places it in a time. You're like, look at what they were thinking and doing at this time.
Is it?
And how they were writing about it and how they were extrapolating that into their media.
Yeah.
It's like when you watch Spartacus and somebody's got a bouffant. The time, it doesn't matter if it's you're playing ancient Rome, right? It was shot during the 60s. There's going to be some 60s in it.
Is it?
There's always something of the time imbued in the text or the media. And that's what's wonderful about humanity. We always shove our fingerprints all over everything. We're just a cancer. We get everything dirty with our details. And this is part of that. But I do have a note to pick with the Clive here with his rhyming, but we'll get to that later. He has a rhyming fail that is phenomenal. But we are introduced to
excellent
Democratic Congressman Frederick Degott. How did they pronounce it? I read it. D-A-G-G-O-T. How did they pronounce it in the audiobook?
Daggett.
Daggett. Perfect.
I thought it was E-T, so.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in chapter 20, which I have a lot of notes for, but half the notes are just, wow, Clive, fucking wow. What? Why?
My first notes are, oh boy, and what the
fuck? Oh, I got to screen cap that. That's the album art for this episode. Excellent. Okay.
We learn he's from New Jersey. He's a black congressman. And he is in South Africa to see Lusana because he's the leader of a revolution. It's hot right now. All the kids are into it. And
yes.
Lusana has his girlfriend at this party. A Congressman Degott is talking to Felicia Collins. It comes up out of nowhere in the text that back home, he has colorful press conferences that are called Daggett's Shaft. Did you come across that? The press conferences?
I don't think the audiobook did that. My audiobook is skipping a couple times. That might have been one of the bits that skipped because it'll jump forward like a minute and I can't fix it. So
he had these hard-hitting but brilliant press conferences when he's back in New Jersey.
Okay.
So much so, and they're so sarcastic that the press has labeled them Daggett's Shaft instead of like Daggett's Dagger, Daggett's Mallet, Daggett's Pageant. I'm just workshopping it, but I've come up with things better than Daggett's Shaft.
Yeah. I'm not even sure how Shaft applies in that situation.
The character, Shaft,
I'm thinking. Okay, Daggett Shaft. Well, I mean, that still doesn't scream associated with a press conference to me.
They say this cat Shaft's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
But I'm talking about Shaft.
And I can dig it.
I know. It doesn't. It's just like, Shaft was a black cop? This guy's a black congressman? I don't...
See? Virtually identical.
Yeah.
I feel like this is him winking at the camera and going, they're black, hello. That felt bad to say. Anyway, we get a lot more description of Felicia using more woods, foodstuffs, crayons. Like, she's described in every possible shade of brown.
She's African-American, yes. By the way, in case you missed it.
And her name, again, is Felicia Collins, and she is a talent. She is a singer, a dancer, an actress. She's famous. She's got Emmys. She's got Oscars. She's damn near EGOT. She's gorgeous. She's only 32, which in previous books, some woman was over the hill at 32. This one, she's only 32.
Ah.
I appreciate the nuance.
Skipping ahead slightly, but in chapter 23, she's looking at herself in the mirror, so there can be even more description as she describes herself in the mirror, and there's the line, 32 years old, still a couple of good years left.
Oh, just a couple. And the congressman is one of the characters in the book that's really concerned about communism. We get one in every book, like making sure that nobody's a communist. He says, when he's talking to Felicia, is Lusana a communist? You know, every few minutes he checks in. Communist? No, not. He's not a communist. Shut down. So that's where we know his mind goes to. And then he wants to prove that he's so doggedly right about the money and politics motives behind Lucerna that he dares Felicia to bet a dollar to prove whether his convictions lay with ideals or money. And she comes out the wrong end of that bet, because when he gets to Lucerna, he makes a vile kind of barter, like, you can have my support if you give me your girlfriend. Like, they're trading a cow.
Yep. And she had no idea what this was going to be until he comes out and says it, because Daggett is part of the U.S. Foreign Affairs Department, and he says he'll get American support behind the AAR. In exchange, give me your woman.
She doesn't leave the room. She's like, my boyfriend, who I've been with, and we learn in this next chapter, she put her career kind of on hold for a year or so. So she's a little bit derailed, and she's used to the finer things in life. She's a fancy Hollywood star. She's like, my boyfriend, I gave him all this time, and he's trading me for congressional support, to which I'd be like, yeah, I would trade a lot of things for congressional support, like especially if there were dollars involved. I've got two kids, take one.
I don't think this proves Daggett's point either, because Daggett was saying that he's more concerned about money than with his ideology, and the ideology being black freedom in South Africa. He offers to get American government support behind the AAR, which would lead to black freedom in South Africa. So I don't think Daggett proved that he's in it for the money at all, because he didn't promise any money. He promised support. Well, he did imply that they would help bankroll it, but still, he helped him get to, you know, his goals, his means, salvation for an entire country. So, of course, Lusana agrees and gives up his girlfriend. I think all it proved is Lusana was an asshole, but not that he's in it for the money.
You are correct. And it's also the calculus of he was doing it for the girl anyway. The motives don't have to be, he wanted the chick. But she goes along with it. Instead of storming out, she's like, oh, I guess he won me now. Oh.
I belong to this man.
Fair and square.
Yeah.
She didn't pick up an hors d'oeuvre knife and shank anybody. I know this whole thing was like a double entendre, but I give it only single entendre status for the for the allusions he's making with her body and the bet and stuff.
Yeah.
But so, chapter 20, a congressman wins abroad.
And throws American support behind the AAR, which I'm not sure one senator could do that or one congressman could do that, but What do I know about American government in the 70s? Maybe that's how it worked. Everything was above board, right? Nothing bad happened?
As far as I know, the world goes by, as long as you can get away with it, it's legal.
Oh,
and that is
yeah.
true of everything. But there could be a congressman that has more tenure. If first term congressmen don't have much pull, but then you get on committees. And once you're on committees, you can steer money.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it winds up in gold ingots in the freezer of congressmen. That's just the price we pay for freedom.
Ah, I love that story. With a search history of what is a pound of gold worth.
Someone's in a search history?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's not by pounds. Good. A pound. Anyway, chapter 21. Fox, the guy whose family was killed, to recap, Scottish farmer, moves to South Africa with his wife, son, and daughter. They are all dead now. He is a missile without a guidance system. He is just a revenge machine.
Yes.
And he's turning to the dark side.
He says, let me lead Operation Wild Rose, because he's back at a meeting with Duval, and Duval says, no, it's too monstrous. And Fox basically says, come on, and Duval agrees. Like, he puts up no pushback.
Come on!
Oh, yeah, the taxes! The finger thing means the taxes!
This is like, I hate to bring everything back to Columbo, but this is just like Columbo.
One more thing.
The world's most famous detective. He tells, the guy, you gotta tell me something. And the guy's like, no, man, I can't. I'll get killed. And Columbo goes, come on, man. And the guy drops all of the details. Oh, yeah, this is exactly that. It's the
speed of plot, to quote you.
If you ask twice, you get it. It's something that we teach our kids out of. Like, stop asking repeatedly. Just because you asked multiple times doesn't mean you get it. But in literature, that's a big word for this, but literature, it says this is how you do it. You ask twice, you get it. So he becomes the leader of the mission. But here's the thing I didn't understand. Fox was like, my friends and neighbors think I'm going back to Scotland, so he won't be missed in his hometown.
Yeah.
But then Duval says, okay, according to South Africa, in this document, we consider you dead. South Africa considers you dead. He doesn't have to be dead. He could just be repatriated.
Yeah. I think that way it just sounds a lot cooler, like they faked his death and he's going underground for the government to lead this super terrorist, anti-terrorist, false flag thing that we still don't entirely have all the information on.
Meanwhile, Colonel Ziegler is in the basement. Oh, he's in some dark office somewhere. I get the feeling it was deep underground where they don't have ventilation.
I think it said one floor down, but I did imagine him in a dark basement with a single light bulb.
Yeah, and lots of files. Files everywhere.
Oh, yeah. He's muldering it up good down there.
Red thread. He's trying to figure out what happened at the Fox farm. I just can't figure out the source of the attack.
The attack was too good. It was too precise. It was too perfect. And it was too free of flaws. Like, he's just nailing it home in this paragraph. This couldn't possibly have been done by South Africans. Every part of it was too good.
Yes.
Thanks, Clive. But Ziegler has gut knowledge. Ziegler is doing a bit of a Dirk Pitt thing here. Because, like, Ziegler looks at all the evidence and, like, all the evidence says it's the AAR. But something tells him it wasn't. And he's not going to rest until he figures it out.
There's a lot of time without Dirk. There's many chapters without a Dirk sighting here.
Yep. We haven't had Dirk since chapter 10. And now we're on chapter 22.
Flying through. And we have Major Thomas Machida. He flew into South Africa. And he gets out of the airport. And there's a cab commotion. So the next cab in line gets overtaken by a pushy cab driver. And he's amused by the scene. And he gets into the cab driver that cut the line. He gets into that guy's cab. He's supposed to be some kind of intelligence officer or spy or espionagist of some kind. And he gets into the cab that fights to get him as a passenger?
Yeah, he's the third in command of the AAR. He's their tech guy.
Oh, he's just the tech guy. Okay. He's not the spycraft guy.
And
but he
I
gets
can't
to
tell
the cab that it, fought for his attention.
Yes.
She's nothing.
I can't tell if this is important or not, but he's going to the Mozambique consulate. Because the Mozambique consul is friendly with the AAR and helps AAR operatives fly around as Mozambique attachés.
Yes.
We're rolling a lot of African countries into this. I don't know if that's going to mean anything.
And he flies into the airport very James Bondy. He's got a suitcase handcuffed to his person.
Someday I'll do that. I want a suitcase handcuffed to my wrist at some point. It'll just have like candy in it, but I want to.
I think that's how you get on a no-fly list. I don't think there's any chill when you're traveling.
Aw, Come on.
Come on.
It's like selling your luggage to doggy. It might be funny, and it's going to be a great story, but it's going to make traveling hard.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent.
Excellent.
The evil cabbie takes him to an underground parking garage, and Machida pulls a Mauser out of his briefcase.
Yes, and I love this. The tip of the Mauser caresses the cabbie's nose, and the cabbie does an eye roll and says, "You're so dramatic."
Sensually. I did like that, because we're meeting Emma.
I'm like, I can feel it. Like, oh, yeah, because it's not a knife. You don't have to shove it. You can just whisper by it. It'll take all of your attention, I presume. You'll go cross-eyed, be like, oh, that's a gun in my face.
You're not going to shoot me.
But this guy, the cab driver, is not fazed. He's a cucumber, cool through and through. And basically, he's like, stop being so dramatic, you drama queen. It's not the prom. I'm Emma. We've met before. But he never looks the same. And we meet the undercover operative known as Emma. And he is a male cab driver. That's all we know so far.
Yep.
And he takes Machida, gives him documents, says it's going to be gobs of money. What was it, $2 million?
Yep. He basically gives him the one-page rundown on Operation Wild Rose and says, if you want the rest, that'll be $2 million.
Yes. He gives him half the cheat sheet
yep.
Or like the movie trailer, but not the movie. He gets the brochure, but not the cruise. And Machida's got to take that back to his guy, Lucena, and see if it's worth the price. That's
yeah.
What his task is. It is a real quick chapter.
And Machida also says, you work at the Defense Department. I want you to find out who's responsible for the Fox massacre, because the AAR still insists it wasn't them. So Emma's like, well, I thought it was you guys, but I guess I'll look into it.
Yes, yeah, so it's legitimate. What is presented as legitimate surprise by Emma, who is Mr. Taxi Cab Driver. And then we get to chapter 3, and we're back to Felicia. Bleh. We need hard consonant names here. Give me a Vicky or a Dini or a Dottie. Felicia.
We're with Felicia at the New Stanley Hotel in Nairobi, Kenya, as we go on our African tour.
Yes, and good news, it wasn't rape.
Yippee!
She wasn't traded to get raped. She was traded to get seduced. So the congressman doesn't trap her in the room. He's like, why did you stay? Like,
yeah,
we just traded you like you were a crate of milk, and you're staying? He's shocked. She's like drawn to his raw sex appeal. No further explanation needed.
I have a couple of those lines underlined. We start off basically with her out by the pool. It describes her body again, just in case we've forgotten. And then it just completely recounts her sexual history.
Oh, my God.
All the way back to when her first time with her 16-year-old cousin when she was 14.
Why does it have to be incesty? Neighbor. Boy
yeah.
next door.
Nope. And she's mad that Daggett is like being so nice to her and isn't forcing anything. And isn't being hostile, and she just wished that he'd demean her like a slave, so her anger would be justified.
I missed that line. Oh, my God.
I had to go back and go, I'm sorry, what? Back. No, wow, he said that, huh?
You're right.
Rather, he said that with her voice.
He said that with her voice. That feels almost violating.
And then she felt her stomach tingle as her nostrils detected his strong male scent. And I just have Clive in big letters after that.
Strong... Is yeah, it's a single entendre status.
Yeah.
She's just frustrated because he's overtaken her thoughts, her dreams, her ambitions.
Yeah.
And now he's like, come back to Washington on my arm. You'll revive your career. People are like, you kind of went hippie. You were too groovy for a while. You got off track with the normies. You want to have record sales again? Come back to America on my arm. And she's like, oh, I guess I'll do it for money. The same way her boyfriend treated her for money.
Yeah, but it's different when she does it because she's a strong, independent woman, I think. I don't know. I can't tell.
Who's been seduced? But Daggett brings up communism again. He's like, your ex-boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Communist? Communist check? No. Still not communist.
Nope. She says that he likes money too much and the commies are suckers who will do anything he asks just because they need to have a toehold in Africa.
Yes. This is the rape absolution chapter. Like, oh, he just wanted to be her friend? That was all a ruse? And then chapter 24, Lucena, or who would you liken him to? Would he be like a Cesar Chavez? Would he be like, what revolutionary would you think of him akin to?
I don't know. He's somebody who showed up from the outside. So who would that be?
So this freedom fighter is fishing.
I was looking up Civ 6. Who is the leader of Gran Colombia again? Simon Bolivar. Yet he's fishing with his second-in-command, Jumana, which also doesn't sound anything like Salama or Lusana, so we can keep all of them straight.
We can. Thank goodness they're all soft, consonant, lyrical words.
Yes.
Really easy to say. Thank you for that, Clive. It's also vaguely exotic because it begins with a J. Jumana.
Is it?
Ooh. And Lusana and Jumana, totally different people, are talking about the files Emma, in quotation marks, has dropped off.
Yes.
Jumana thinks it's a swindle, and he doesn't respect Lusana for even entertaining it.
It's a $2 million ripoff.
And then Lusana's like, oh, we're not going to pay for it. We'll set up the payment and the drop-off and just kill him and take his stuff, which is time-honored tradition.
Yeah, because he is intrigued by the plan, by Operation Wild Rose. He says the plan is genius because it would drag sympathies away from the AAR and to the embattled whites of South Africa.
Yes.
This book does make a good point about how when there's two sides to a conflict far away, it's just all about where the sympathies lie.
Let's not extrapolate that at all right now in this day and age.
There's nothing in the
That's
news.
Let's not examine that whatsoever.
Nothing at all.
Yes, the media and the story is more important than the boots on the ground.
Yeah.
And more sympathetic press we have on white victims is where the sympathies will go. And this can be put into a textbook by an aged man in 1978. In 2023, this concept shouldn't be difficult.
Jumana says that we don't need to, you know, engage in a sophisticated war. We don't need to deal with all of these sympathies. We need to drive our people with an iron hand because Africans seldom know what's best for them.
I want to jump off a cliff with that paragraph. Like, what? Say that? Wait, I don't think. What?
You don't have a lot of respect for the people you're fighting for, dude.
You know, bossy people just want to be bossy.
Yeah, they want to be in charge.
And Napoleon was going around, you French fucks don't know what you're doing, I'll be in charge.
I'd make a much better emperor.
They shot a croc, I forgot about that.
Yeah, because Lusana and Jumana are arguing back and forth, and he's getting angrier and angrier and angrier, and then suddenly he's friendly and says he was tired. I'm sorry, Mr. Lusana. Which isn't suspicious at all. And that's when Lusana realizes, well, Machida sees that there's a crocodile like 2 feet away from Lusana, and the guards open fire and they shoot this crocodile for like, I guess, 5 pages. There's so much talk about bits of scale flying in the air and blood and gore and the crocodile rolling over. And
really?
I don't know if it was 2 pages, but it really seemed like it went on for a while. And Lusana realizes that Jumana saw the crocodile and didn't say anything.
So he's a weasel. Snake in the grass.
I have to kill him. Everyone's backstabbing everyone.
Jumana, at the end of the chapter, smiles evilly.
Yes.
With a evil glint in his eye. Ha ha ha.
And that's as far as I thought we'd get, because chapter 25, they're back in Chesapeake Bay, Washington, and I figured, well, that's 9 chapters. I mean, I'm sure that'll take an hour, and we're actually slightly ahead of schedule, so.
Chapter 25, Fox got a boat. He's healing now. He got a boat. It's the first step in the art of healing in middle age.
Oh, yeah.
If you're an American, you get a jet ski and a boat.
Boat, sports car, Harley Davidson.
Yes, exactly. Fox is in the U.S. and he got a boat. I don't think he's going to do water sports.
I'm sure he's on a boat so he can have meetings. Because as far as I can tell from the last 4 books, anytime there's a clandestine meeting on American soil, it takes place on a boat. Raise the Titanic movie. They had like 2 big meetings that are just on a boat for no apparent reason.
Oh, they're so easy to get to. If you've ever driven out to a marina, you know it's just easy peasy.
Oh, yeah.
Or a dock. Jesus.
Stylish as hell, though.
Very, very. Maybe Clive was taking helicopters everywhere. Perhaps we can't relate to the jet-setting lifestyle.
Yeah. 1978, I'm sure everybody had a boat.
I didn't know until this week. 1978, Mengele was still alive. He died in 79. Joseph Mengele, the Nazi...
No, I know who it is. I'm just thinking, wow, that's a fun random fact to come across. I suppose I would have just naturally assumed he would have gotten Nuremberged with a bunch of the others, but did he just get like the whole life in prison thing?
Oh, he never got Nuremberged.
Didn't he?
He drowned.
Huh. Did he like flee to Argentina or something? Was he one of those?
He had a whole passport that said his name and everything. He was just
wow
down in Brazil, and I think he got Mossaded because he disappeared by drowning, which happens occasionally if you're a new swimmer or an Australian president. you just disappear by drowning. But if you're on the Mossad kill list and you disappear by drowning, I have questions. I'm not going to ask them. Do what you got to do, guys. Do what you got to do. To a point. Do anything you want with Mengele.
He drowned eventually, you know, all the water seeping in through all the bullet holes in his chest.
I'm sure he died eventually, yes.
Yeah. There was some gurgling.
Yeah. His heart has definitely stopped.
Mission accomplished.
Yes. At least I hope it went down that way. That's the lens we're seeing it through. Anything was possible in the 70s. Anything.
I'm hoping at some point this book gets back into like Dirk Pitt and the Vixen 03 and what those canisters are.
In the plane under the water, we've left town. We've left Dirk in Colorado. We'll get back to him eventually. We always do. We'll see Dirk again. Don't be frightened, listeners. Dirk is coming back.
This is absolutely the main feature of the later Dirk Pitt books, is they'll start off with two completely independent stories that you cannot imagine how they're intertwined. And they're eventually intertwined by the end, which is pretty cool. It's just this one comes out of nowhere after the last couple of books. So I think this is the first time he's really nailing home this particular style.
What is interesting is reading this, I think of myself as progressive, as leftist, as non-racist as I could be, having grown up the way I've grown up. You try to break through stereotypes and paradigms that you're raised with. But then you read something like this, and you're like, oh, you're still of the time. Like, what am I doing now that will be so cringing next year in 10 years, in 20 years?
Yeah. We meant well, they'll say.
Yeah, and that just is not enough.
Grandma Nancy, she talks like that. Just ignore her.
Oh my God, they're going to say that. They are.
And you'll throw hands at Thanksgiving.
When she said that, it was like the queen saying, oh, I didn't punch the man in the face. I'm like, dude, queen. Paris is so out there. But she's the first woman. She was like my age when I met her, because I started dating my husband when we were in 1993. So a long ass time ago. And she was like, when you're middle age, it's great. Nobody sees you. You can rob a bank.
Yeah, kind of.
And I've loved her since.
Excellent.
I'm sorry you don't have the American Thanksgiving where you have anxiety and people arguing. Ours is a debate. It's like a Geek Squad debate team at our Thanksgiving. You have to come with your notes. We're going to solve the Middle East. At this table, we're going to solve it. Everyone has ideas and plans. We'll shout until we'll get one through. And we'll write a letter to the congressperson. But no, we didn't solve the Middle East. Some voices were raised, but mostly in joyous laughter at grandma.
Ours was back in October, because ours is, I guess, we celebrate the British Thanksgiving. The American Thanksgiving was slightly different.
Not better.
No.
It's a day to get together. It's like...
Exactly. That's how we treat it. Like, we definitely understand and acknowledge the horrible history of it, but we're still just using it, you know, this is the cultural time for everyone to get together and have a big meal together.
Yes, and it's always fascinating to see how kids are taught, because kids are still taught about Christopher Columbus in like second and third grade. And then by grade, they come to you, do you know how bad Columbus was?
All that was wrong.
Yeah, I've been there.
That's all the shorthand we had to give you to sort of get through our national history.
Yeah, like, oh, we have to teach the wrong racist stuff first, and then we'll get to the corrections. Risky maneuver. Hope that works out for you.
Yep.
But society's going great. No problems.
When I was growing up, we had this whole series of books called the value books. And each book would be different. It'd be like the value of learning, the value of patience, the value of charity. And the one for Columbus was the value of curiosity. And I still have all these in my basement because they're kind of neat and they're full of nostalgia. And we would just read them over and over and over again. And in theory, the messages behind them are all great, but they are all also so amazingly sanitized and whitewashed. It's unbelievable.
I remember reading a book like that when I was little about Louis Pasteur.
Yes.
And how had...
Which one was that?
It was a white, kind of glossy hardcover book. I could still picture it.
That's the value of believing in yourself. And all of these books had something... All of these books had something that would become the character's imaginary best friend. And yeah, the Louis Pasteur one was where, like, as a child, his brother was savaged by a dog with rabies. Was it a talking germ became his friend?
And he gets...
Yeah, The Value Tales by Spencer Johnson, MD. We had the whole series and we just read them endlessly. Like, we would go through...
Oh my God, that's it.
Hey, we had the same books.
Holy cattle.
I've still got all mine.
This made such an impression on me, this book.
Yeah, same. Yep, that's the exact one. I got it downstairs. I'll bring it next time.
Oh my God. I tried to buy that. Those are really expensive now.
I was going to say, I'm on Thrift Books right now, and the hardcover is $4.79, like $4.79.
Oh, because I tried to buy that years ago, and it was like $50-$60.
Yeah, maybe, but now it looks like they're all, well, the one that's $4.79, the cover is acceptable. If you want the very good cover, that's $40.
But Louis Pasteur had a volunteer for his vaccination. Like, he took the neighbor's kid. He took a peasant he just found.
He took the neighbor's kid and made him temporarily deaf.
Oh my, that's not in the book.
Oh yeah, it is.
Seven the last time I read it.
The one where he's deaf is Thomas Edison, where he does something and he deafens the kid and he runs off screaming.
Oh, I thought Thomas Edison just killed the kid and then, Graham Bell had a deaf daughter.
Yeah.
Alexander Graham Bell had a deaf daughter. That's all the random trivia. It's like a mix of files where the paper fell out and all the papers got put in the wrong files. That's my memory of education at this time.
The value of helping with Harriet Tubman, I'm sure that one's not problematic at all. Man, I got to go through these again. I can't believe you heard of these.
That book, that Louis Pasteur book made such an impression.
Yeah.
I cannot tell because it was
is one of the ones we read the most, I think.
It was kind of morbid. And I learned about rabies, which is also kind of metal when you're learning about diseases. I thought that was really interesting. So I was fascinated by everything rabies and Louis Pasteur. But it's not until you're an adult, you're like, he just took a kid. He took a rando kid. And he was like, we're going to try vaccinations, which sounds bonkers. I'm going to shoot you full of this disease that killed all of your friends and neighbors. Good luck. Oh, there's no cure because we don't have medicine, but good luck.
I've made some changes and it might fix him.
He wasn't broken until I got to him, but
yes,
it's just something no parent in their right mind would agree to now, but it's the cornerstone of vaccinations.
Yes. Medical history was wild.
Yes. There's a Sawbones is a medical history podcast.
With the McElroys.
And I will leave you. They're quiet now. The play date is quiet in the other room. There's no dogs barking.
Uh-oh.
There was a cake on the counter when I got into this room.
It's on the dog now.
When I open that door, where will the cake be? Will it be on the floor? Will it be gone?
It's on the walls.
Will it be on the ceiling? Right now, it's Schrodinger's cake.
It may or may not exist.
It exists in every form right now. As soon as I open that door, it'll be a definite form. And I dread it. But I did it to myself for the entertainment.
Excellent.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Enjoy your day. Bye.
This has been Kussler Hustlers. Your hosts have been Topper and Nancy. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @KusslerHustlers.